Om Shiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmaracharya Pariyantam Vande Guru Paramparam. Om. Be seated, please. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavidyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om. Good. Welcome back. Welcome also to the many students who attend this class regularly online. We continue our study of Uddhava Gita. We're in that wonderful section where the four Manasaputras, the four sons of Brahmaji, have approached Krishna and asked, how can we overcome the gunas? And Krishna, to answer the question, Sri Krishna assumes the form of a hamsa, a swan, which is why this entire text, in addition to being called Uddhava Gita, it also is called Hamsa Gita, in recognition of this unique hamsa avatara, incarnation of Sri Krishna in the form of that swan. So we're seeing now, in the midst of Sri Krishna's response to that question about how to overcome the gunas, and we'll pick up the thread where we left off. Good. Ahankara kritam bandham, ahankara kritam bandham. Is that my usual raga? Let's see. It's not. I sometimes get into the Bhagavad Gita raga. Ahankara kritam bandham, ahankara kritam bandham, atmanortha viparyayam, atmanortha viparyayam, vidvan vivid nirvidya samsara, Vidvan nirvidya samsara chintam turye sthitastyajet, chintam turye sthitastyajet. I'll just mention in passing that there's no one correct melody or raga for chanting these. You could theoretically chant it to any melody you want, maybe some. Was that Led Zeppelin? Was a popular rock band when I was a youth. I don't think it'll sound very good, but that's the principle. The Vedas have a fixed melody, not other scriptures. On the other hand, there are conventions. So there's a conventional melody, raga, for the Bhagavad Gita, and there's a conventional melody, as it were, for Mahabharata, Puranas, etc. So I try to follow those conventions. Here, Sri Krishna continues to talk about the problem. When we say the problem of the three gunas, that's like saying the problem of life. Remember, three gunas is matter and energy to the ancients. So in their view, everything was three gunas. Like our view is everything is matter and energy. So worldly life, the three gunas are. So what is that problem of bandham? He says, atmanaha bandham, one's own bondage, is ahankara sankritam, due to the ahankara. There's actually a very important Vedantic teaching here. Let's take just a moment to appreciate it. So bondage, as we've described in many classes before, is when you are compelled by raga, dvesha, sometimes even against your will, you're compelled by raga, dvesha, to chase after things you think are desirable, to run away from things that you think are undesirable. That compulsion, that idea of having an inner boss. Remember, I've described those raga, dvesha like two bosses in your mind, directing what you can do and what you can't do. That's a sense of bondage, not having complete inner freedom. Being subject to compulsion obviously means not complete inner freedom. So the bondage we're talking about is this compulsive behavior due to raga and dvesha. But Sri Krishna doesn't mention raga dvesha here. He mentions ahankara, ahankara kritam, caused by ahankara. And here's why. There's an intermediate step. In fact, maybe a couple of intermediate steps. Why do you have raga and dvesha? Suppose you were perfectly content. Would raga and dvesha bother you? If there was nothing that you needed to chase after, nothing you needed to run away from, raga, dvesha, who cares? But that's generally not the case, because your body and mind have lots of issues, as they call them, and those issues need attention, and it's due to those issues needing attention that you find that raga and dvesha. So here's the point. The issues, as we call them, but nice American term, I don't know if you're aware of, in our viewers may not know that in American English, the word issue is sometimes used in a very specific way. For example, when you say, what's your issue? What's your problem? Is kind of the sense of it. So those issues, those problems belong to your body and mind, and they don't belong to you, the conscious being. So what's the problem? The problem is one of identification. And this is what Vedanta is all about, that you fail to recognize your true nature, that inner divinity, Satchidananda Atma, and instead you identify with your body and mind, and that's where the problem really begins. That identification has a connecting point. The connecting point between you and your body and mind is the ahankara. We'll call it like a knot. What is it that connects you to your body and mind is ahankara. Now, this really deserves a little attention. Ahankara is usually understood in a fairly theoretical way, the ego, but I'd like you to appreciate it as part of your day-to-day experience. Right now, you feel like an individual person with a body and mind. You are seated in your chair. You are looking at me. You are there. I am here. So you have that sense of being sitting in your chair as an individual person with a body and mind, looking out through your eyes, hearing whatever comes in through your ears. That feeling of being you that I'm trying to describe right now, that feeling of being you is what we really mean by ahankara. It's not an abstract idea. It's what you feel right now. But it's hard to identify because most things we feel come and go fairly rapidly. If you feel cold or hot or happy or sad, those feelings change rapidly. Ahankara is a feeling that doesn't change. It's with you when you get up in the morning, and it's with you when you go to bed at night. And because it's unchanging, it's much more difficult to recognize clearly than other feelings. So we've had this discussion, I'm not sure in this class, but in other classes we have, it's best to understand ahankara by its absence. by its absence. For example, in dreamless sleep, do you feel like you're laying in your bed? Do you feel like, whoa, this is really deep? So anyway, you get my point. That feeling of being an individual person is completely gone in deep sleep. Other good examples would include if you're listening to your favorite music and you feel yourself getting lost in that music. You've had some kind of experience like that. While you're lost in the music, are you connected to your body and mind? You're not thinking about your body and mind. You're really absorbed in that experience. Or if you're an experienced meditator, you may have had similar experiences in meditation where you lose awareness of your body and mind. My point is, the ahankara is not an abstract concept. It's a feeling that you're having right now, whether you recognize it or not. And it's that feeling, ahankara, that connects you to your body and mind. That's the point. Which is why Sri Krishna here is pointing to ahankara as the source of the bandha, the bondage. So this bandha, this bondage, this being subject to the compulsions of raga dvesha is atmanaha ahankara kritam. It's due to atmanaha, simply your. It's due to your ahankara. It's due to that sense of individuality, the feeling of being an individual person. And significantly, that bondage is artha viparyayam. Viparyayam is that which is opposite, that which stands in the way of artha fulfilling your goals in life. Because if somebody is bossing you around up here in your mind, that boss doesn't care about your goals. In fact, you've already seen this in your job, in your workplace. You have a set of personal goals for your career or profession, whatever it may be. Does your boss necessarily share your goals? Often that's not the case. Your boss has his or her own agenda, and you have your own agenda. As long as you're being bossed around by your boss, you may be prevented from fulfilling your own agenda, like enjoying your work. So you get my point. This compulsion prevents you from living a fulfilled life. That's a simple way of putting it. When you have these inner compulsions, raga dvesha, they become obstacles to fulfilling your goals and to having contentment in your life. But vidwan, in the second half, vidwan, and in here not just a knowledgeable person, but an enlightened person, an enlightened person, nirvidya, becoming detached from what? From that identification with the body and mind. So the detached person knows that if the body's got a problem, the problem belongs to the body, not me. This is no joke. This really and truly is how it eventually looks to you. The problem belongs to the body. The problem doesn't belong to me. The problem belongs to mind. The problem doesn't belong to me. That's the vision of the enlightened person. So that enlightened person, turye stitaha, in the last line, that enlightened person who is stitaha, established turye, we saw that before, in the fourth. Remember, Sri Krishna made a reference to the three states of experience, waking, dream, and sleep, and he referred to himself as the fourth. That's the so-called inner divinity, Sri Krishna dwelling within you as you, as the essence of who you are as a conscious being. So he calls himself the fourth. That fourth is actually refers to the Mandukya Upanishad, a very heavy discussion about the nature of consciousness. The one consciousness that abides in waking, dream, and sleep gets called the fourth. And that's why Sri Krishna refers to himself as the fourth, Stitaha Turye, that wise person, enlightened person, established in the fourth, established in me, that wise person, Tyajet, gives up, renounces what? Samsara Chintam, all the concerns about worldly life, the concerns about fulfilling, how about this? Fulfilling the agenda of Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha. How's that? These are the inner bosses. You've got to give them some names. So Mr. Raga is the guy telling you, do it, go for it, now. And Ms. Dvesha is the one who says, forget it, who cares, don't leave it be. And these inner bosses sit at their desks, so to speak, in your mind. They run your life. How can you be content with these two, Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha, running your life like that? Therefore, tyajit, kick them out. You can't fire your boss, but you can. So I guess that's where the metaphor stops working. You can't fire your boss. These, though, tyajit, have to be overcome. And the way you overcome them, Sri Krishna has told here, is not... look at this. How to over... Take it seriously. These two bosses are stuck in your head. They've been ruling your life for decades. How are you going to kick them out? Doesn't work well, right? Just like you can't fire your boss at work. So there has to be an alternate strategy. And Sri Krishna gives the alternate strategy. He says, Turiye Stitaha. When you are established in Sri Krishna, that's what he says, the wise person established in Sri Krishna. What does that mean in terms of our metaphor? When you are established in your true nature as the source of contentment, peace, joy, when you are established in that inner truth, you feel complete contentment, which allows you not to depose these two dictators in your head, but to ignore them. That's the key. You can't get, you know, they've been stuck in your head for how long? Do you think, is it realistic to think one day they're just going to pack up their belongings and leave? That's not the way our minds work. The point of this verse, and a little subtle, is you don't fire Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha. You learn to ignore them. And you learn to ignore them by turning your attention towards the true source of contentment and peace within you. Nice to, we kind of restored our metaphor nicely. Okay, let us continue.
Yavan nan harta dhipum so, yavan nan harta dhipum so, nani varteta yukti bihi, nani varteta yukti bihi, jagart yapiswa panagnyaha. Jagart yapi swapanagnyaha swapne jagaranam tata yata swapne jagaranam yata. Yavat, as long as pumsaha, for a person, as long as a person has
na a person is nana artha dhihi. As long as a person has a mind, dhihi, which is nana artha, has many goals, many likes, many dislikes, many goodies that they like to chase after in life. Many goals, I think, is a meaningful term here. Artha has many meanings. One of them is meaning. Here, we'll take it in the sense of goal. So, having many goals. We all do, right? Everyone. You have your to-do list. Those are all your goals. Whether it's a to-do list for next week or next month or your so-called bucket list, what you want to do before the end of your life, it's a list of goals. And we all have, when I say we all, I'm including myself. We all have all these goals. Then Sri Krishna says that as long as the person who has all these goals, as long as na nivarteta, as long as these goals persist, as long as these goals are not removed or overcome, yukti bihi, with reasoning, with these teachings, with proper thinking, and with the help of the scriptures, as long as that person continues in this way, second half we'll see in just a moment, obviously it's not good as long as you persist, because Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha will keep telling you, go after that goal. And then she says, no, go after this one, run, or don't do this, don't do that. In fact, conflicting. When you have that list of goals in life, you notice that sometimes they conflict with each other. Like what one is, save up enough money for retirement, and the next one is, go on a one-month vacation to Hawaii. These goals don't exactly go together. That's normal. So this is Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha. They're running your life. So as long as that continues, you will struggle in your daily life. I lost my train of thought. So having all these goals is normal. What is a pragmatic approach to handling all those goals? The pragmatic approach is, by the way, the non-pragmatic approach is to do what Shankara did. He threw away his to-do list. Figuratively speaking, when you become a sannyasi, figuratively speaking, you throw away that to-do list. So short of becoming a sannyasi, that is, while you have a family and responsibilities, how to pragmatically handle all the goals on that to-do list, the solution, the pragmatic, this is a non-pragmatic solution, the pragmatic solution is to put them in order. There should be an order in your to-do list. And if the topmost item on your to-do list is spiritual growth, you're in good shape. That's all it is. No matter how long that list is, as long as the first item, the highest, which means the highest priority in your life, as long as your first priority is spiritual growth, doesn't mean everything else is not a priority. They are. Everything else needs to be done. That's why it's on your list. But they're at a lower order, lower level. So as long as spiritual growth is in that first position, this is the pragmatic solution to handling this problem of nana artha, having many goals in life. But here in context, as long as Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha are bossing you around, making you chase after all of those various goals, according to Sri Krishna, jagarti api swapan agnyaha. According to Sri Krishna, you are ajñaha, ignorant. Well, ignorant because you're allowing yourself to be bossed around by Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha. Not only that, but now he gives a metaphor. You are swapan. You are asleep. Jagarti api. Even though it's daytime, even though you got out of bed in the morning, even though you're doing all your daily activities, even then, swapan, you are asleep. Obviously, it's a metaphor. This is the so-called sleep of ignorance, the darkness of ignorance, a metaphor used many, many times. Sri Krishna makes that very clear in the last line. He says, swapne jagaranam, jagaranam yata, yata, just as. Swapne, while you're dreaming, jagaranam, it feels like you're awake, right? When you're dreaming, you might have a lucid dream now and then, but generally, while you're dreaming, you don't say, I'm dreaming. You feel like you're awake during your dreams. But you're wrong. You're not. In the same way, Sri Krishna says, is that if you are in the sleep of ignorance, you are right now, you think you're awake, but according to Sri Krishna, you are asleep. And here we can add a little bit of detail. Asleep to the reality of what's going on. The reality of what's going on is you are unnecessarily being bossed around by Raga Dvesha. It's time to wake up to that fact that you are laboring under all this compulsive behavior and come out of it. And Sri Krishna gave the solution we saw in a prior verse, turiye stitaha, to be established in your true self, that inner divinity, the source of fullness and completeness, because when you're established in that inner truth, it's so easy to ignore these inner compulsions, Mr. Raga and Ms. Dvesha, as we've been calling them. That's the key. And this metaphor of a dream is used quite often. In fact, Sri Krishna himself used it in, I think, towards the end of chapter 2. He talks about I'll just paraphrase the verse instead of reciting it for you. So Sri Krishna says, the wise ones are awake in what other people think is a dream or night, and other people think other people are awake. Easier just to see the verse. So Sri Krishna says, where is it? Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagarti samyami. So Sri Krishna is actually paraphrasing himself. He says, Yanisha, that which is night, sarva bhutanam, for all other beings, he says, tasyam, in what is night for all other beings, samyami, the wise person, jagarti, is awake. This is a complete reversal. A complete reversal of how you look at life. And let's just look at it. Let's take it in a very simple, straightforward way. Most people think what is most valuable is all the little things in life. Get more of this, more of that. Go to the mall and buy more things. Go out for dinner. Go to the movies. Go and do all these things. Most people think that's what's most valuable in life. The enlightened person says all of that is useless. What is most valuable is simply to appreciate your own true nature. Now, what's interesting is the people who are at the mall think that if you are just sitting quietly appreciating your true nature, all the people at the mall think you're crazy. And you, sitting and appreciating your true nature, you think all the people at the mall are crazy. This is that day and night metaphor. It comes off in a rather philosophical way, but it really shows it's, you know, we use the metaphor, it's like day and night. The difference between these two attitudes are like day and night. By the way, it's no surprise that there are many words for knowledge, one of which is bodha, as in Arsha Bodha, the wisdom of the Arsha, means of the ancient rishis. And bodha, knowledge, comes from a root bud, which again has many meanings, like that artha has many meanings. So notably, bud, the root, can mean to know, can also mean to wake up, which is why Buddha got his name, the awakened one. So the same word, bodha, can mean knowledge, can also mean being awake. And I guess the message here is, if you haven't already done so, wake up. Wake up to the reality that your life is being dictated by these inner bosses, and it's time to start ignoring them. It's time to turn your attention within. That's the sense of it. Okay, let's continue.
Asattvaratmanon yesham bhavanam tatkrita bhira, bhavanam tatkrita bhira, gatayo heta vaschasya, gatayo heta vaschasya, mrsha swapna drisho yata, mrsha swapna drisho yata. Atmanah anyesham bhavanam.
Anyesham bhavanam, other things. And we'll make a connection to our metaphor. The things you find in the mall. Anyesham bhavanam, those other things in the world that you find at the mall. They are other. Atmanah anya, they're other than you. And here, We're back to square one, as it were. What is the true source of contentment? And you already know the true sense of contentment is not at the mall. You already know that the true source of contentment is within you. And that's what Sri Krishna is saying here. So, anyesham bhavanam atmanah, all those other things that you find at the mall, etc., things which are other than your true self, the true source of contentment, all of them are such a asattvat, because they're not real. And here, real is used in a little bit of a technical sense. What we consider real is that which doesn't come and go. The enjoyment you'll get from whatever you find at the mall, you'll enjoy it for a while, and then it's over. You buy something, you think it's really cool, and you buy it, you take it home, you enjoy it for a week or two, and it's over. Who cares? So this is how life works, right? All those items on your to-do list, except for item one. Leave item one aside. All the other items on your to-do list, all the other goals, only bring temporary contentment. The only way uninterrupted contentment is possible is by redirecting your attention away from all those external things, redirecting it within. So he says, in Sri Krishna, he explains this in some detail. He says, about all those other things, tatkrita bhidha. He says, there is a kind of duality or multiplicity created buy all those goodies at the mall. There are many bhida gatayaha, many goals, many objects in the mall. How many stores in the mall? This is just silly. How many stores in the mall? And how many objects in each store? My gosh. And you need it, right? How can you be happy if you don't have those particular items? Anyway, this is the point. Bidha gatayaha. There are so many goals, so many goodies that are available, and so many hetavahacha, and so hetu means cause, means of fulfilling those goals. There are so many goodies to buy and so many ways to pursue those goodies in life. And what we're describing here is conventional worldly thinking. This is how people think. Might not be how you and I think. In fact, it's not how you and I think. But you know, conventionally, people think, I need this to be happy, or I'll be happier if I get that. That's conventional worldly thought. You learned a lesson long ago that if you do get that object, you're, as I just said, you might be a little happier for a few days, and then it's over. And that's, and then after your happiness is over, then at the end of the month, you get your credit card bill. And what you thought would make you happier ends up becoming a problem. Okay. So this is conventional worldly life, and Sri Krishna says, has no kind words for that conventional worldly life. He says, it's all mrsha. It's literally false, but in the sense of it's useless, it's a waste of time. He gives a metaphor, swapna drishaha yata, just like something you see in your dream. And we need to expand that metaphor a little bit. Suppose in your dream you have a high-paying job. You're the boss, and you've got this huge paycheck, and you decide you buy yourself a huge mansion with 10 bathrooms and all of that. You go on that 1 month vacation to Hawaii. You're enjoying all of this stuff, and then you wake up, and all of that is just gone. Well, like I said, Sri Krishna's a little harsh here. He says, in your worldly life is like that dream, because suppose in this life, you buy your dream house, you go on your dream vacation, and then you die. It's the same thing as what you've accomplished in a dream. Sri Krishna's being a little rough and tough here. What do they call it? Tough love. So this is his tough love. He's saying it is mrsha. It's a waste of time. When you wake up out of a dream, it's gone. When you die, it's gone. That's what he's saying. Okay. We'll see one. This is an interesting verse. We'll see this one more verse. Okay. You can see already that it's in a much longer meter. The meter is called Vasanta Tilaka, and it's quite long, a lot of syllables per line. And usually when you see a really long meter like that, it's highly poetic. And poets love these long meters. The rest of us say, oh God, because it's hard to recite and it's a little hard to get the meaning out of these really long, complex verses. We can handle it, so just be ready. It's got a long meter. It's a little hard to recite, but it's got a wonderful poetic meaning. Let's see it. Yad, is it up? Yeah.
Ya jagare bahiranukshana dharminor tan. Ya jagare bahiranukshana dharminor tan. Bhunkte samasta karanar hriritat sadrikshan. Bhunkte samasta karanar hriritat sadrikshan. Svapne sushupta upasamharate sahekaha. Svapne sushupta upasamharate sahekaha. Smrityanvayat triguna vrittir drigindriyeshaha. Smrityanvayat triguna vrittir.
Nice. Got this nice lilting meaning. There are many prayers recited in this particular meter. And you can, poets love it because it gives them, here's the problem, most of these verses have only 8 syllables in a quarter. That's pretty confining. I think 14 verses in a quarter here, so much more syllables to work with, more scope for expression. So the basic structure of this verse is looking at what you can accomplish in the waking state, dream state, and deep sleep states. So let's look at that. He says, Yaha, one who, jagare, while they are awake, what about that person? Second line, bhunkte, they enjoy. What do they enjoy? End of the first line, artan, all the goodies at the mall. So they enjoy all the goodies at the mall, which are bahihi, external, not internal, external at the mall. And Sri Krishna wants to point out all of them are anukshana dharminaha. All of them have dharminaha, all of them have a quality of being anukshana. Kshana, moment. Anukshana. The enjoyment you get is momentary. From all those goodies at the mall, all those external sources of happiness, they all give momentary pleasure, jagre, in the waking state. And you enjoy all those things, one more word here, samasta karanaihi, you enjoy all those things with your 6 senses. Remember, in Vedanta, we constantly talk about 5, but there are actually 6. In addition to seeing, hearing, taste, smell, and touch, number 6 is the most important of them all, mind. Antakarana is considered a sense. So with your 6 senses, you enjoy all of that stuff. When you're dreaming, how many senses do you have? 1. That's the contrast, right? So you get all 6 while you're awake. While you're dreaming, just 1, the mind. And that's what he says in the next part. Hridi tat sadrikshan swapne. Swapne. In a dream, on the other hand, tat sadrikshan, you enjoy similar things, hridi, in your heart, in your mind, with just 1 of those 6 senses. And then finally, sushupte, the A dropped off due to grammar rules, in deep sleep, in dreamless sleep, upasamharate, when your mind becomes perfectly silent, what remains is saha ekaha. In fact, he's again referring back to that Mandukya Upanishad. Those teachings are coming again and again. Saha ekaha, what remains is that 1 conscious being. Look how Sri Krishna describes that 1 conscious being. The one who is, middle of the last line, triguna vritti drik. Triguna. You could take it as three gunas. You can also take it as the three states of experience, which is what the commentator does. Both are fine. You can either say you experience the three gunas in waking state and dream state. In deep sleep state, you experience only one guna, tamas. But you can say you experience the three gunas, but a preferable interpretation would probably be three gunas means the three states of experience, waking, dream, sleep. So you are triguna vritti, the condition of your mind in all three states. You are the drik. Ekaha drik. Drik is seer, observer, sakshi. One and the same observer of these three states, waking, dreams, sleep. Tell me, when you're dreaming, are you a different... Interesting. You have a different body. Everything is different. When I say different body, you know, people who have physical... who have, like, lost limbs and so forth, they dream of themselves as being able-bodied? They do. Not surprisingly. So you actually get a different body in your dreams. Yet, you are the same person. The same person who is aware of what's happening right now. When I say person, I'm talking about conscious being. The same conscious being who is aware of what's happening right now is the same conscious being who knows what's happening in your dreams, is the same conscious being who knows there's nothing at all happening in deep sleep, who's aware of the darkness of sleep. The same one being. And how do we know it's the same one being? There's actually something a little technical here. And Sri Krishna says, fourth line beginning, he says, smriti anvayat. That word anvaya, as soon as you hear it, you know we're into logic. Logicians like that word, anvaya, connection, a necessary relationship, a logical connection, a logical relationship. And Sri Krishna says here, there is a logical connection due to smriti, memory, and it's obscure. So we have to fill in the blanks here. And the point here is, who is that one observer, the person, the conscious being, who's observing right now is the same as a conscious being who's observing dreams, same as a conscious being who's observing the darkness of sleep. Tell me, is that observer different from the one who was observing your mind when you were 5 years old? When you were 5 years old, think of how different you are as a person. If we see a picture of you as a five-year-old, we say, that's you? There's no similarity whatsoever for most people because everything changes, and not just physically, right? Think of your five-year-old mind and your mind right now. Any similarity? I don't think so. So it's like you are a completely different person from that five-year-old, yet the same sakshi, the same conscious observer who knows what's happening now in waking state, in dream state, in deep sleeps, exactly the same sakshi was present in that five-year-old's mind, behind that five-year-old's mind. That's what he means. Smriti anvayat. There is a consistency of that observer, of the sakshi. And Sri Krishna saves the best for last here. Not only is that sakshi, that awareful witness, that conscious observer, is absolutely the same from childhood, youth, middle age, old age, you know, to our last moments with the body and mind, it will be exactly the same you, the same conscious observer, the same sakshi. And Sri Krishna saves the best for last. He says, that one is indriya Ishaha. That one is the Isha, the Lord or Master of the Indriya, of the senses. And this is a subtle way for Sri Krishna. That word Isha is also referring to Sri Krishna as a double meaning here. So it's referring not only to the consciousness which lies beyond, behind your six senses, but it's also an indirect reference to Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna dwells within you, as your true nature, as that so-called inner divinity, as Satchitananda Atma. That's divinity. We won't see the next verse, so let me just make a comment here. We use that word inner divinity all the time. When you look in the mirror, what do you see that's divine? I don't see anything. Okay, so obviously it's an inner divinity. It's something that, I'm in a mood for bad jokes. Watch out. So if it's an inner divinity, it means while you're having surgery, your doctor finds it. Hey, what kind of joke is that? My gosh. All right. So you know it's within you and it's divine. What does it mean, divine? Means having the same nature as Ishvara. They have the same nature as Ishvara. Your body is limited, Ishvara is not. Your mind is limited, Ishvara is not. Body and mind born, dies, Ishvara not. What is the same? The same is your consciousness. Your consciousness is unborn, uncreated, pre-existed your conception, and exists as if there's a subtle body that goes from life to life to life, that saha ekaha, that one same sakshi. In fact, this would really expand our discussion here. We said it's the same one who is aware of what's happening in a waking dream and deep sleep. It's the same one who's aware of what's happening when you're 5, when you're 25, when you're 55, when you're 105, why not? I'm not sure we want to live to 105, but anyway, nice to think about it. It's the same one. And if there is such a thing as reincarnation, it's the same one observing body and mind in the previous verse, in the previous one to that, and back and back and back, and forward. If there are future verses, it will be exactly the same sakshi. So that is that inner divinity, unborn, uncreated, unchanging, immortal. That's what we mean by divine. That is the nature of your true nature as consciousness. That consciousness is the inner divinity. And Sri Krishna has said again and again, both in Bhagavad Gita and here in our Uddhava Gita, Sri Krishna says, I am that self that dwells within you as you. Very nice. Okay. We have coming up more of these really long poetic verses, so we'll save that all for our next class. A couple of announcements here. Of course, tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class, Shankara's text, Upadesha Sahasri, at 10 o'clock, followed by satsang, question and answer, at 11. I have one more interesting announcement here. You know, I've been working on all these video projects. I'm starting to work on a couple of future projects that I'm going to need some professional help for. Some of the projects require artwork of characters, sometimes animations, and the current generation of artificial intelligence tools are fully capable of doing that artwork. So in other words, you don't have to be an artist, but you do have to be artistic and be able to use these artificial intelligence tools. So if that's something you can help me with, I'd be very grateful. There's another project that will require a professionally trained male singer who can record and produce a couple of my compositions. That's another project. So if you, any of you, can help me with any of these projects, then send me an email. That'd be wonderful. Okay, we'll conclude with our prayers. Om Ganana Hantva Ganapatigam Vamahe Gavinga Vinam Upamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanas Patahana Shrinvan Uddhavasida Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Prashyantu Ma Kashchad Dukha Bhagbhavet Asato Ma Satgamaya Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya Mrityorma Hamratangamaya Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.